Okay, we're live. GM. Yeah, we got a special early edition today of Wrecked Radio, episode 64. Just woke up personally. Hopefully I'm sharp. I mean, like, we've been staying up late with this crazy ass market. There's been a lot of volatility out here. Some amazing opportunities yesterday. Some painful things happened, I'm sure, for people who are leveraged. But yeah, today we got Suzu on the show, so we're happy for him to be here. Legendary, infamous, everything, all the above. So we're excited to dig in with him about the market, about some of his experiences, different things like that. But before we get started, Osef, do you want to give a little rundown on the sponsor and give out that code that I'm sure everyone's looking for?
Yeah, quick one. As you guys know, show is sponsored by Rollbit. We'll give away two codes to the show. We'll do a little loot box spin at the end of the show as well. So first code is Suzu8141, Suzu8141. And this is live. If you're listening on audio, this is actually streamed live on video on Spaces as well. And we'll get the YouTube link up there as well. And that's it.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, guys, good morning or good afternoon and good night. I think we got a lot of time zones covered here, but, I don't know. The past couple of days have been crazy. What's the assessment, the post-mortem after yesterday's fun? Anyone want to jump in and give some post-mortem on that?
I'll defer to Sue.
Yeah, dude, were you actively trading this at all, or what's been your process over the past couple days of craziness?
Not super active, but I think I saw a thread from you, right? I think it's pretty accurate what you said. I mean, it's just low liquidity going into all-time high and not enough kind of, you know, it's a super heated on derivatives right now. Possibly the most heated I've ever seen in any cycle, actually, because you know, previous cycles, you would have like faster flushes of high funding, but we've seen very rarely this kind of grind up on very, very high funding. And then even after this flush, it's still very high funding on Bitcoin and Ether, especially. And that was especially surprising. So I think on some alts it reset, but on like Ether now, for instance, it's still well over 100% on several exchanges, even with Athena arbing it. So yeah, I think my gut still says like there needs to be like another flush of the whole thing, but you know, if there's enough inflows, then it doesn't really matter. And then kind of the perp guys can trade ahead of it and kind of, you know, you're kind of like driving at the edge of a cliff basically, but you have the wind behind you and you're kind of not falling off essentially.
It's wild because yesterday there was like almost $1 billion worth of long liquidations, and usually that's enough to like reset funding for a few days. And last night, as I call that, you know, the heat map's green, like it looks a bit more chilled out. Woke up this morning, I was like, fucking hell, it's like already like yellow orange again. These people are like back on it straight away. And we just had like another wick down a few minutes ago, I guess, that wicked right back up. It's like full degen mode right now.
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, I love the volatility, obviously, as a short-term trader. So this is like, you know, a godsend for me, especially since I kind of underperformed from the past quarter from the run from 30 to 60K. It definitely caught me off guard. Sure, caught a lot of people off guard. Maybe I definitely underestimated the ETF and how crazy the inflows would be. I mean, there's been a lot of opportunities though. We got the meme coin cycles, different cycles going on, Solana meme coins, you know, ETH meme coins kind of taking back seat. But have you been positioning at all? Or, you know, I guess where's your head at with like how to deal with positions right now? Are you entering positions? Are you kind of risk off? Are you even trading a portfolio? I guess a lot of people probably wonder, like, you know, it's been quite a ride for you. Are you still trading with some size, or like what's your strategy currently?
Yeah, definitely still very active looking at stuff. I think that, you know, the way I'm seeing right now is you want to be able to hold stuff that you got into earlier as long as possible, because we're in that early majority phase now where, you know, retail is starting to wake up, normies are starting to wake up, and they're starting to do some research and they want to get in. So it's definitely not a time to let go of bags, I think, that especially the ones you got cheaper that you kind of very hard to get back in once you lose it. So I'm not a big fan of rotating too much at this point. I think rotations can come, let's say, later in the cycle. I think that on majors, my general philosophy is you want to be long ETH instead of Bitcoin right now, because BTC is already up, even though the inflows are all into Bitcoin. I think Evan SS6 tweets a lot about this, and he's a good guy to follow. He's one of my He's one of my big, like, you know, this is a guy you need to watch kind of guys. But, you know, he talks about how there's like billions of inflows in the Bitcoin ETF, but Ether is still performing. Part of the reason for that is also, you know, we're at very like low float mentality now with Eigenlayer sucking up a lot. And also just with, you know, it's so deflationary from the point of view of new supply that it doesn't even need inflows. It just needs people to like pull their offers and then it goes up. So I think you want to be very overweight Ether versus Bitcoin at this point. I think Solana is an interesting spot right now because you have the FTX estate just selling, you know, absolute metric tons of SOL through these 3-year linear lock products. And that goes through the big OTC desks as well as you can just ping them yourself if you have size. But, you know, that's all struck at around $60 to $65 while SOL itself is at $130. But somehow it doesn't matter because, you know, it's almost like a big ICO, right? It's like another ICO for SOL. And a lot of these guys might not sell it. Some might, but apparently it doesn't really matter. So I think SOL should, in theory, underperform ETH for the next few weeks while this is getting digested. You know, if a lot of these new buyers are fresh buyers, then it decentralizes supply and it doesn't really matter. And that can be a bullish effect too. So
what do you think? You know, BTC dominance has risen to whatever it is, 12, 18 month highs. And obviously that's because the specific buying has been occurring in BTC. I mean, we've had almost $10 billion of net inflows into the BTC ETF. Do you know, in past crypto cycles, we've seen this great big alt cycle and alt season and everyone, you know, BTC dominance dropped to 40% in 2021. Do you see a scenario where that happens again this cycle, despite the huge buying we're seeing in the Bitcoin ETF?
Yeah, definitely. I think it happens every cycle. I think there are a lot of deep reasons for it. I think probably the most simple is that when BTC stalls, but it's generally still strong, people want to make money, but they feel that wealth, so they want to gamble, right? It's like every cycle you get a point where people are like, I'm going to take some percentage of this money and play along, right? Because almost everyone, when they come in as a Bitcoin maxi, like I see people from TradFi now on their feeds, people came in from the ETF and they're like, okay, Bitcoin is this. And then they go into Ether. They'll go into Ether when it starts outperforming. And then at some point, you know, when they stall a bit and they hear about their dumb friends making a lot of money in dog coins and other stuff, they're going to take some piece of that winnings and then play with that. So the alt cycles are kind of almost mandatory, right? Because they kind of, it's one of the engines that also fuels the exchanges, because the exchanges, they make 90% of their money during these alt seasons, actually. You know, if you just think about spot volumes on like Bitcoin and Ether, you know, it's pretty dry stuff. It's low fees. The HFT firms are negotiating the comms down to zero and like everything is, but you know, when there's alt seasons, then, you know, stuff gets a little more interesting for the exchanges, especially the offshore exchanges. So, you know, just as, you know, a lot of market trends, the house will want these things to happen, right? So I think that'll be later this year. I don't think we've quite seen it yet, for sure. I think it's a little bit early still. We haven't broken all-time highs yet on Bitcoin and Ether, but I think there should be a very, very large alt season at some point.
I guess the theory is like the guy that sells his Bitcoin, he maybe buys ETH to chase that next bit of return. And the guy who sells his ETH, he's probably like, maybe I'll buy SOL or maybe I'll buy some other, you know, other layer ones or meme coins, or whatever it is. And then it just kind of like drips down and feeds down. But just doesn't, it's a weird one because sometimes you feel like we should be seeing it now. And obviously some alts are up a lot, but it's crazy to think we still haven't really seen like the actual alt season from a Bitcoin dominance perspective.
For sure.
So what do you think of, I know I read your tweet that you put out every once in a while, which is like the stuff that you're watching or the stuff that you like. And I'm curious your take on meme coins. Like we've had a massive meme coin run in the last 2 or 3 days. You know, you've got Pepe, which is on your list, hitting north of a $3 billion market cap. You have Bonk up there, $3 billion. Dog with Hat just hit $2 billion today. Do you think we get back to levels of 2021 where we see like 80 billion Doge, like 50 billion SHIB? And do you think there are potentially other meme coins that can challenge those like multi-billion dollar levels in terms of market caps?
I think so. I think that last cycle, Doge having been one of the only coins ever to break its all-time high versus Bitcoin from a previous cycle, it kind of creates this Lindy effect to meme coins actually this cycle, where, you know, for the man on the street, he hears about meme coins and he's like, shit, I read about Dogecoin Millionaire, you know, on Newsweek, and I could be him. You know, it's a Pascal's wager, right? It's very hard to get people to Pascal wager on the majors now, because it's like, it's almost like Nvidia. It's like, okay, sure, maybe you bought some when you're early, cool, that's great for you, I love that for you, but it's like, you know, if someone gets shilled like a $2 million meme coin, $10 million meme coin, that sense of like, you know, being early is very high actually. So, and because Doge made it last cycle and Shiba Inu made it last cycle, that creates that lingering kind of Lindy effect for all meme coins. It's like the halo effect for all meme coins. So I think for that reason, you know, meme coins will do really well. I think also from a regulatory perspective, meme coins are kind of really solid this cycle. I feel like, you know, last cycle, you know, people saw how hard like Elon, you know, shilled Doge, and it was still like, it's pretty okay. And I think that this cycle, people are like, you know, this is cool. This is like, so you see more NFT crossover into, I mean, I think PayPay especially, you saw a lot of NFT crossover.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a lot of where the energy is coming from too. And so I think it's something that, you know, there's two types of people in crypto, right? Like some who are really into saying, okay, this cycle is serious money is coming, hence no more meme coins. And then there's other group that's like, well, this is just like social finance, permissionless, you know, permissionless internet money. So of course there's going to be meme coins because that's what people like. So.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead, Gabriel.
Do you think there's like any caps on the upside of a meme coin? Seems like, you know, people obviously get these crazy dreams with meme coins and come up with like wild market caps, and they have been. It's kind of a self-fulfilling, especially recently, how they're just going up with it, like, you know, tons, no liquidity on the offer, it feels like, in some instances. Is there caps on how high they can go, or like, is this like really an uncapped situation just because, you know, you can't value them obviously on anything?
Yeah, you can't value them. And a lot of them that are really well distributed is very, very difficult. And the way that the media plays into meme coins is always that kind of Streisand effect, right? Where they want to like make fun of it and be like, this is so stupid. Look how stupid crypto bros are. And then they just inevitably pumps another 200% when they do that, because it draws attention to it. So that'll happen again this cycle, because, you know, it's just the way crypto is. So I think, usually I think people for the smart money, they kind of wait for that, or they wait for like the flipping of like a coin that they probably shouldn't flip. Like, you know, Shiba trying to flip Doge is usually an example of that, where people start selling some Shiba. But, you know, it's tough to say. Like, I think the way to trade these is just momentum, I feel, with kind of a broad plan. Like, I think the asymmetry, we're still in the asymmetric phase in
yeah.
general. I think that smaller meme coins still have a lot of really interesting potential. Just because, you know, when you imagine the world where, let's say, Ether is around 8 to 9K, the amount of wealth effect in the space is quite high. You know, like last cycle when ETH is like 3-4K, the wealth effect coming into NFTs and coming into, you know, stuff is really, really high. So I think just from natives alone, a lot of meme coins are going to the billions. And then if you think about other money coming in from outside, I think it can be quite formidable.
I've got a question, in mention of smaller meme coins, I've got a question from the MOG community, I promised them I'd ask you this question, which is, when the talk about Teneo and Liquidators came up, I'm wondering how exactly Kyle brutally mogged the courts, and how he expects free speech to mog the way the New World Media report stuff, how the algos will be mogged. That was a question from guys.
That's a really funny question. I mean, I don't know how Kyle mogged them, actually. Kyle honestly mogs quite hard. I mean, I'm sure we can all see it on his feed. Honestly, yeah, I don't know how to answer it, sorry, but yeah.
What are the aspects of that coin that drew you to it? Because that's one of you know you called out really early last year when it was like a sub 10 million market cap, and right now it's approaching 500 million, and all the kind of meme coins of that era kind of struggled to take off, and that's the one that did. So like, what was the reason that you got into that one, and you know, how were we able to identify it like at such an early stage?
I kind of just like the word. I feel like it's a useful word in a lot of situations. It came from that, really. And then I think I mean, there's a lot of community overlap in general. Like, I think Milady community liked it a lot. You know, they reply to me and say, I get DM saying, put on the visor, put on the visor. So I was like, okay, just put on the visor, right? How much could it cost me to put on the visor? So I put on the visor. Yeah, I think it's a cool community. It's a good vibes. I mean, I think mock community, it's not as price focused in the early days. I felt like the one, like Ticker Bitcoin, I like too, but it's a little bit price focused, I felt. But it's still really funny, and I think it will still do well. But I feel like mod community is like a really interesting vibe. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, the best ones are always simple, right? It's like dog with hat. What's the thesis? Yeah, it's just wearing a hat.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, it's got a hat. Of course. So it seems like the super cycle is still intact. I mean, do you still believe in the cyclical nature of the crypto markets and markets in general? I know you're a big proponent of that before, had a, you know, kind of telling people not let the banks steal your coins. And I mean, a lot of people definitely ran into that with the dip we had and the low of the cycle. Now the banks seem like they're here, the institutional capital's here. And, you know, people with that kind of money have the longer term type thinking. I mean, we saw a pretty big dip yesterday. I mean, it wasn't like massive, but will the dips be shallower? Is the cycle still intact? You know, is all this institutional capital going to protect downside? I don't know. What's your views and all that, especially going into the halving?
Yeah. I mean, I think in the early phase of institutional inflows, it's very one way. I do think that it can be a double-edged sword too, because they can just start having outflows out of ETFs, and then that'll just be like selling. So it's not like it's locked up forever, right? But I think that there's a big normalcy that I've seen in this whole, in the whole perception of crypto, because I think in part because 2022 was kind of so extreme violence that people, after seeing that, now they're like, you know, this is actually fine. Like, I, you know, things worse than I thought possible have already happened, and it's, the asset class is still fine. So, so I think that that is giving people a lot of calm. I tweeted this like last week, but basically, like, I think I've seen this thing where, you know, people over 50, they feel very comfortable having 20% in crypto, and they feel bad they don't have more. So I feel like, you know, at least last cycle, having 20% in crypto as a normie was unheard of. Like, I don't think any normie had that. So I feel like this cycle, it's really proper asset class kind of allocations are starting to begin. You know, not just in high net worth, kind of like across the spectrum, really. So I think that's really bullish for like having a softer landing cycle. But I think that just because of the way that coins will, you know, money will move out of, in and out of coins very quickly, and then the leverage we're seeing in perps, like, we are going to see like crazy stuff, I think, this cycle as well. I mean, you see it every cycle. I think institutions coming doesn't necessarily mean you won't see crazy stuff anymore. Like, in some ways, you might also see more crazy stuff happen. There's some of the mechanisms that are building now, like Athena, which is very innovative in some ways, but it's also, it can become very dangerous at some point as well. And I think that there's going to be more and more stuff that gets built that's kind of in that nature. So
can you talk about what does Athena do? I don't know how, I don't even know this. I might look like an idiot for asking that, but I'm sure a lot of people don't.
I mean, like, it's like a stablecoin backed by long staked ether, short perps, right? On CFI exchanges. But my view on it is, like, you know, it's fine when it's small, but when it's huge, you're essentially financing a very big ETH long position by the market, right? So that can go very pear-shaped very quickly if the market just gaps through. So, you know, if that gets used as collateral everywhere, then it's kind of becomes really insane. But, you know, it's one of those things that it works very, very well through most of the cycle. So I do think there's potential for stuff like that to go wrong at some point. But I think, you know, like, in terms of like, does the market learn lessons from things that happen? Like, I used to think yes, but now I kind of more lean toward maybe yes, maybe no, because it's always different people. So it's different people learning the same lesson, right? Like, last cycle, you know, or the previous one, there were funds like, you know, FBG and whatever that did a lot of deals and then kind of blew up in 2018 and so on. But then, like, you know, we wouldn't like learn that lesson, or like SPF wouldn't learn that lesson, because it wouldn't be relevant in that sense. You'd like hear about it. You'd be like, okay, that dude's fund blew up and we bought his Solana SAFT at 4 cents or whatever. But that doesn't, like, you don't think, how did he end up in that situation? You more just think, okay, well, you know, so, you know, that kind of creates that cycle of, and it's kind of a beautiful, I think, birth, death, cycle that you have in crypto, right? It's like this like ultra fast hyper capitalism, really.
Yeah, no, things happen quickly. And I mean, history always rhymes, if not repeats. And so definitely with different people learning similar lessons over and over, it does continue to happen, I would say. I mean, it's been happening in traditional markets as well, you know, continues to happen in different ways. We had the Bill Huang blow up when he kept aping. That was, you know, something that people would think, you know, they have learned from in the past, but they didn't. I think it's interesting also what you're saying about, you know, the allocations of normies and how financial advisors in general are shilling it now. And this is a pretty low float asset class across the board. I mean, 19 million is massively small float for something that the whole world's trying to allocate to. So maybe the volatility will actually increase, like you said, with all the institutional and different capital competing for that. We have seen like one way volatility essentially from 30K to 70K besides yesterday. So it's interesting. It does create a lot of trading opportunities and opportunities to really, you know, get some crazy things going on. So I'm excited for that. Hopefully it continues. Yeah. But it definitely seems like the upside kind of uncapped for something so low float. I mean, like, I don't know if you pay attention to traditional markets at all, but the past 2 or 3 years, there's been a lot of low float stocks that have a bit of liquidity, but they go fucking apeshit, like, you know, up 1,000% in 2 days, things like that. Things that were unheard of before, just because there's not a lot of people shorting in the market, and then shorts get blown out in the short. Yeah, I don't know. It's just been pretty wild times across the board. So I don't know. Do you have price targets on where these things can go as a whole? Like, is there a cap nature to Bitcoin's price, or is this thing seriously uncapped now?
I think it's pretty uncapped. I mean, I don't have a price target per se. I think a lot of things can happen. I think it can get to 1 million. It could get to 200K. It could get to, you know, I think as it gets past gold, I think there will be kind of a lot of reaction functions that it's hard to predict. Like some governments may try to say, okay, the Bitcoin in these ETFs is now ours or something, or they might say, okay, no one can redeem these. I mean, there's all sorts of weird things that can happen. It's hard to predict, but I do think that, you know, there's so much supply lost on Bitcoin as well. And there's so much of this, you know, never selling mentality from the very, very early guys that I think at, you know, that's a very extreme kind of function that you don't quite see. And also just from a time perspective, you know, the fact that Bitcoin hit 20K in 2017, right? We're now 7 years in. So, you know, just from like a multiple perspective from 2017, I mean, there's lots of stuff that has gone 10X since 2017, right? We can name dozens and things that like normal people bought and is up 10X. So Bitcoin at 200K as a 10X from 2017 is not even going to be like that ridiculous of a concept, I feel. From kind of an all-time high perspective. And then if you think about once it gets to 100K, it's pretty close to gold, and it's pretty close to some really interesting kind of things. And it's going to be so volatile as well by that point because of the low float dynamics. Like we're already seeing there's more volume on Bitcoin ETFs than on Bitcoin spot sometimes, right? Like I think that just shows like this is now basically the most important like meme to trade, like the most important thing for TradFi to even care about.
People who care about unit bias, like yeah. I guess they just don't even have to deal with that anymore because they just buy the ETF. So it kind of unlocks like a lot of capital that.
Yeah, it's like $30, right, on the ETFs.
Yeah,
even yeah, it's like all weird.
Yeah.
So where I think the thing that I'm trying to figure out, I think there's a lot of new people coming in right now who are just like, cool, I'm just going to buy and things will go up. And then there's people who've been around for maybe 2 or 3 years or came in the last cycle or cycles prior who have had positions on and they're trying to figure out like, you know, stuff's up a lot. And people like, you know, take some profits here and there. But the thing everyone's trying to figure out is like where we actually are in the cycle. Like prices technically have actually been rising since March or April of last year, of 2023, maybe even earlier than that. And so we are into 1 year of prices gradually rising and maybe a bit more aggressively in the last few months. But cycle-wise, where do you think we are in that cycle? And what are the signs we should look for to tell us that, you know, we're getting close to the end or, you know, it's getting closer to the top?
I mean, from Fourier cycle theory, we can't possibly be anywhere near the end because, you know, that should be something like December 2025, right? If you just look at December 2021. So we have a good 18 months plus ahead, maybe 21 months, right? So and now that obviously feels insane because markets have already gone up a lot. But if you think about 2019, similar mentality, right? 2019, you know, Bitcoin did a 3K to 14K move, right? It's just that not many people cared at that point, so they wouldn't have remembered it. But
yeah,
so, and then 2020 was a bit unique because you had the COVID dump, which is a legendary dump in TradFi itself, coinciding with the halving. And I think this cycle, one of the reasons why natives especially are caught a bit off guard by the speed of the move is because I think most people expected some kind of a dump into halving. I thought there could be some kind of a small dump into halving, but I think the ETF flow confluence plus the fact that because it was such a big dump last time, almost like reflexively the other way, the next one will gap the other way just to screw with people's minds. And probably the next one is going to be the other, you know, it's like one of those things, like you can't learn that lesson from the COVID dump that every pre-halving it dumps like 60%. Like that's not something you can learn from it. So
yeah, I mean, those two previous dumps you spoke of like were kind of sort of black swan-ish dumps, right? I mean, like COVID dump was obviously a black swan. The last dump went pretty deep because of some black swan stuff. I mean, like, you know, FTX going down, funds blowing up, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know, maybe it's just something that we can't see that will cause it, and it's not really correlated to having it all. It's kind of my thought. I don't know, though.
Yeah. You could see that, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff where as prices get high, like weird news starts coming out, right? Like in 2021, we saw that where, like, you know, Bitcoin mining was getting really flooded, and then China was just like, let's just ban this stuff, right? Let's, you know, and that was kind of, I think in a way it halted the cycle a little bit, like it slowed it down. You know, so you could see something like that out of some countries. I think Nigeria just came out with a big ban. You know, I kind of see that as the US is the main game, right? And the US kind of not going to ban it more than it. I mean, it's generally, I think it's going to tolerate a fair amount this cycle because it's already, you know, the stuff that's out there, it's just the same as traditional finance. It's up in a different shell, right? So it's not like anything that they don't understand. I feel that it's also a pretty advanced system. I think that, you know, China can't ban it more than it already has. So it's not like they can, you know, like ban it harder. They have to unban it first to then ban it. And, you know, they're generally pretty constructive on it in terms of allowing at least, you know, like I think what they're doing in Hong Kong, like, you know, they have, you know, Bitcoin, Ether, you know, regulated exchanges, that kind of stuff. I think it's generally something where I think everyone kind of understands crypto for what it is now, this cycle. So I think the regulatory heat likely comes much later as people are like, wait, this is going to flip gold, or wait, this is going to have like fiat implications or maybe some banking sector implications. But it's harder to predict that kind of stuff. I mean, I try to take it month to month on that because you kind of can't predict those things.
Yeah, it's kind of like the more money, more problems effect.
Exactly.
People get too rich, they try to chop the legs out. So that makes sense. I'd like to talk about that black swan a little bit that just happened with FTX. I mean, like, well, I'd love to hear your thoughts about that whole situation, how it occurred. It was just leverage spiraled out of control, and then they just tried to patch the books by, you know, doing different things that weren't supposed to happen. I don't know. What are your thoughts there on the SBF situation and, like, how?
I mean,
How I made it, let that occur.
I mean, I think like my perspective on it is very long term because I've known Sam since early 2019 when he was just doing Alameda and he's starting to do FTX. And at that time, you know, some people were bullish, some people were very bearish, and you know, he had blown up a couple times that year and kind of got it patched through different ways. And so, like, they were always known for having a messy book and for taking a lot of risk. Now, obviously, if you take a lot of risk and you're right, then you're a hero. If you don't, then you're less so. So I think most people in the market, they kind of understood that FTX plays pretty fast and loose. Like, I think DeFi Summer is an example of that, where Sushi was like very clearly being farmed with customer funds because it was just moving there and somehow no one cared. And it was this weird thing where I actually thought more people would care. Like, I actually FUDded them quite a bit 2019 because I said, look, they're just going to use all the customer funds, like, and they're just going to blow up at some point. And that was my only thesis. And like a bunch of guys were like agreeing with me, like Amber, QCP, a few other firms, but then it didn't matter because what they did was they did an ICO. They used the money to pump the FTT token. So then it was just like, well, then you're just like, you were wrong, right? Because you were bearish, but you were not bearish on the price. You were more just saying longer term, this is like questionable behavior. So, you know, but that obviously is the way a lot of businesses actually start. It's through kind of a growth hack, right? Like when Uber goes somewhere, they're not legal actually where they go. Airbnb is not legal where they go. So I think that's why VC is tolerated a lot from Sam, because they're like, you know, he's the anointed one. So, you know, as long as he's lucky and, you know, he can kind of play his way through tough situations, and he has played his way through tough situations before, then it should be okay. So I think what happened was really confluence of a lot of factors, right? Like, I think one is, you know, he should have not made such an enemy out of Binance, right? Like, you know, it was at a point where it's almost like, you know, the number one and number two, like you're both one, like you don't need to fight actually. Yeah. Cause it's not like an actual esports. Like you're not playing an actual esports. This is like life, right? So I think sometimes the thing is esports, but it's just life. So I think that kind of happened a bit for him. And then I think also, you know, he should have restructured, right? Like he has a really strong ongoing business. A lot of the funds, he just commingled everything. So since the beginning, he's never had it not commingled. So I think if you look at his commentary when it first came out, he never understood that he shouldn't really be commingling. And that's what he kept saying, well, dollars are fungible. Because he's like, as soon as you put the dollars on my exchange, it's mine now. Like I get to decide what to do with it. And that comes from also his effective altruism, like brainwashing too, which is like, I know better what to do with your money than you do. Obviously you'll get your money back, but like for me to use it is just like logical. So I think he was genuinely confused why people were upset about the fact that he was using it however he liked. Because also it had worked for so long, right? So I think, you know, it's a very complex thing. And, you know, if he had better advisors around him, he could have still restructured it, in my opinion. Because if he hadn't spent the money defending the FTT $22, also it would have been a smaller hole, right? So, you know, a lot of things have to go wrong together for it to happen the way that it did. You know, so it is what it is.
Yeah. It seems like there's a lot of opportunities to make it a better situation that he kind of fumbled the bag on and, you know, messed up. I guess the other elephant in the room would be like, if you want to talk about a little bit about 3AC and how that whole thing went up and went down, and I don't know what you learned from it, or like, you know, just anything on the background of that. I'm sure a lot of viewers wondering.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it was like a milder version of the FTX one, like in terms of like we didn't have retail, we didn't have like customer funds or anything like that, but you know, we had our own big book, and then we had, you know, a liquid complex portfolios of various stocks we thought were arbitrages, or also stuff that was just like core longs. And you know, Luna caught us off guard, not really because of UST itself exposure, but just because we thought the LFG was a good mechanism, and we were buying Bitcoin and Ether, you know, as well during that period and also before it. And so that I think was obviously offsides. Cause I think also Doquan made a lot of enemies throughout that earlier period as well. So like, I think, you know, I have this theory still that if he had like a more, you know, less arrogant personality, more people would have wanted to help him as opposed to like trying to destroy him, right? Because he basically pissed off the entire Ethereum community. He pissed off like a lot of people just like without any need to. And you know, like during March, there was like talk of like LFG round, and like, you know, there was talk of like Binance coming in and putting BNB in the LFG, and then he turned it down because he thought, you know, make it impure coming from the Cosmos eco, like they have some decentralization maxi kind of concepts. But like, you know, if he had taken BNB and FTT in the reserve, actually he would have like properly made an ecosystem that worked. I mean, I generally thought that given how all the exchanges were running vaults on UST, and like this was just such like, you know, two top 10 coins, like I thought people understood that if it were to go through a big DPEG, that like you have to bail it out or you have to do something to like recapitalize and restructure. And I think he actually in a way also thought that that's what would happen. But I think what the main problem was that the infinite minting of Luna on chain, you know, you just couldn't stop it, right? There was no module to stop it. If there had been, you could just stop it, halt trading on exchanges, and then just like re-denominate it, right? It's almost like a Ethereum DAO hack at that point. Now, obviously, it would have taken a haircut, but it would have been like, okay, instead of, you know, Luna from 100 to like zero, it'd be like maybe Luna to 100 to like 25, right? Like that could have still happened if there was like better thought process. And I think had that happened, market wouldn't have gone down as much either, because it would, I think what the market priced in after that was just like a loss of confidence that crypto people know what they're doing, right? Because if you launch all these vaults like everywhere and you get 18 billion in market cap in a USC, and then the next day you say, actually, no, it's all gone. Like that is a very bearish thing that happened. So I think, you know, after that, a lot of spreads blew out, like GBTC blew out from like negative 20 to negative 50. Staked ETH even blew out. So, you know, like a lot of our trades went quite pear-shaped, and, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I think for me, like a lot, I learned quite a few things. I think one is that like you have to plan, like you need a firm where there's people that are very paranoid as well as people who are very optimistic. I think Ka and I both lean toward the optimistic side. And then we didn't have enough voices inside that were more paranoid. Like we had a guy before, but he retired in 2021. You know, I mean, he was so paranoid that he thought we shouldn't do GBTC because he thought there's more than a 1% chance, like the second round, there's more than a 1% chance that like the coins will be lost or something because there's so much Bitcoin now in the trust. So he says like, if there's even a 1% chance of this, then you can't do it. And it was like such an interesting way to think. And I was like, because he said like, you know, the upside, let's say we call it at most is 15% premium, 20% premium by then. And he's like, but even like, forget the discount. He thought even if there's a chance the coins get hacked or something, then you can't do it. And so I still have his like, you know, like his logic for it. It's quite impressive. And interestingly, this was the same guy who told us to go into ETHE in 2019. Because he said, you know, ETHE, that was right when Grayscale launched actually. And, you know, we had kind of, like everyone was doing GBTC then, but he was like, you know, ETH is awesome. We should just do ETH. And then that like no one else has the trust. So we did that, you know, made 20 to 200 mil on that. So I think like making sure I have like a really strong team of people that we listen to and we kind of have different opinions and kind of checks and balances in terms of like that kind of thought process. I think we lacked toward the end, which we had in the beginning in a very good way. So I think like, yeah, it's definitely that. And then also, I think we also should have restructured, like we should have handled the fall better. Like there were some creditors who were saying like, guys, just launch a token, restructure, it's okay. Like, you know, the market can bounce, we can let you do this and do that. And like, I think we just lacked the energy because it was just happened so suddenly, it was such a shock. And then we let the lawyers decide and they said, you know, just put into liquidation, it's a fund, whatever. And then, you know, some creditors said, you know, just do a restructuring. It doesn't have to be like, you don't have to know what you're gonna do next, but like, that's still better than, you know, putting in liquidation. I think that, like in a way, if we had more courage, that's what we should have done. And we should have, I mean, we would have had to face the heat in terms of like having to explain everything and having to do stuff earlier. But I think it would have been like, I had a good friend, he's a lawyer in Singapore and also a crypto guy, but he said, look, you know, people don't lend billions to other people like every day to the companies. But when they do so, they're also expecting that when it goes wrong, that you stay around to like, fix it, to try to find a solution for it, because they actually in some part of their brain that they want you to fail so that they can get a big percentage of your equity. Like that's supposed to be what happens in this kind of lending. But unfortunately what happened in 2022 is that it just like gaps to zero. Like everything is gapping to zero, right? Like there was one big hunter, for instance, that I can't name, but like he was saying stuff like he hoped that Alameda would default at some point so he could get FTX equity. Because he had a clause in there that he will get delivered FTX equity if Alameda defaults for some period. So he's like in a way, like they're hoping for the distress, but then the distress was way bigger than like it like. And then you know, I think the whole dynamic was just weak. And I also feel like I think social media anime makes it harder to restructure in crypto because I think you know if this is like COVID, right? You have a restaurant or hotel, it starts doing really poorly. Like that just gets handled, you know, quietly in a side room, and then you eat at the restaurant. You don't know that it's, you know, the debtors that you become a creditor, all that kind of stuff. It just happens, right? Whereas in crypto, there's almost like this, like we saw this with FTX, especially where like, as soon as FTX blew up, people were like making fun of FTX users. They were like blaming them. And it's just like, you know, then they're like angry. So it's like, there's this kind of not many rational voices in the room saying, you know, shit happened. Let's like at least recover the value because there's still a big value in like the fact that, you know, millions of people trade on the same exchange. So, but that's kind of the difference, I think, between this cycle and Bitfinex cycle, right? Because Bitfinex, you know, 2016, BTC hack 120,000, they managed to restructure. They gave all the users equity, and then that went 20x. I think the reason why that could happen also is because there was less social media and there was less kind of pressure on the founders and kind of stuff. There was like, okay, shit, the Bitcoin's gone. What do we do? And then, you know, that there was less trust of the lawyers as well, like to kind of figure it out. So they're like, okay, whatever you can do, let's do it. So I'd say like, you know, Yeah, it's.
No, that makes sense. I mean, it sounds like, yeah, the USC Luna caught a lot of people off guard and turned into a black hole, and that kind of triggered the spiral down. And then you're kind of, yeah, being the main character never seems to be like a good thing on the social media front. Definitely make things tough. I mean, this is Wrecked Radio, so we do talk about people's wrecked arcs a lot. And then we also talk about the mental game a lot. And I'm sure, I mean, like, just from my swings, I've had a worked a lot on the mental game. And you've had swings that are, you know, a lot bigger than mine. So I'm curious to see how you've dealt with the mental side of things and, you know, tips to how you've overcome it and just really anything on that front, because I think we like to focus on that a lot here.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I would say the thing that helps me is like you can kind of see life as like a learning process, right? So there's a lot of wisdoms you can't really learn until you go through them. And, you know, at the top, we were very arrogant. We thought everything we touched, we can win. And you can't really learn that that's bad unless you have those setbacks. And it's something where if I had those setbacks earlier, it would have been different. But also, you know, the decisions to take risk a certain way also would have been different. So it's like you take the good with the bad quite often in life. And also, I think, you know, in general, people see when they're themselves are unlucky and when others are lucky. And they attribute the success of others to luck, but to themselves to skill. And then when others are, you know, so that's something that people tend to do. So it's important to like look back in your own life and say, like, when have you actually been just really lucky? And it wasn't just like, you know, skill. And then when have others been, you know, very skillful? And then you kind of get an appreciation for all sorts of things. Because I think, you know, at the top too, we were like, you know, a bit judgmental of people who didn't do as well. And we'd be like, oh, no, you only made 2x that cycle. Or you only made like, you know, 3x. So I find that that's something that like, you know, it's a very toxic way of thinking. And you always get humbled after, you know, delving a lot into this kind of mentality. Just because, you know, ultimately, you're trying to be a better person every day. You're trying to compete with yourself, right? Not versus others. And so just being really self-focused, self-improvement, focus on your own process, you know, and figure out, you know, are your swings due to, you know, you had an emotional kind of reaction to the market that blew up? Or is it because you made a miscalculation? Or what was it? Try to learn from it, what the real thing was. And also just try to see it as like, look, like, a lot of the greats had a big blow up in the early careers. Some of them had it later. Some of them had it earlier, but it's part of the game. If you don't have it earlier, you may have it later when it's much worse. Like actually one of the problems for us too, was like in 2021 in August, our two junior partners retired. And the 3 months after we made a ton of money. So we actually thought, oh, we don't actually need these guys. Like they weren't able. And so a lot of times, like what you think is good in the moment can be very bad. Actually what you think is bad can be good. So be able to see that is really valuable as well. So.
You know, at some point in 2021, 2022, you guys were like, you know, some of the biggest players in the markets, the main characters, and you tweet something and like everyone would read it. Like I remember reading it when I entered the market in 2021 and you were one of the biggest people I followed back then. And you ran a ton of capital and, you know, some of the moves that you made probably moved the markets and stuff. You were pretty much like some of the biggest fish in the sea. Do you have aspirations to get back to that level and start managing large amounts of money and having, you know, that much impact and influence on crypto markets again?
I think, you know, at my age, like I'm 36, like I actually believe in the idea, like, you know, there's old traders and bold traders, but there's no old and bold traders. And I was also quite influenced at a younger age by Paul Tudor Jones's documentary Trader, where he talks about how, you know, like the goal of trading is like you exit a legend and like you exit a champion, what was his wording actually. And so I kind of feel like, you know, I didn't really exit a champion, but a champion of some sort, right? Like a champion of destruction, I guess. But you know, it's something where I feel like I've already seen it all in that kind of space, you know. So, you know, I think we'll do a fun of fun product where we invest in some funds. So I tweeted about GPLP stuff because, you know, actually what I realized last cycle I was really good at was analyzing like who are the young guns who like you need to like follow and give money to and like do stuff with, right? Because like, you know, Andrew Kong, Arthur Chong, we found these kids when they were like had $5,000 in their bank accounts, right? Like they had $5,000 of stable coins probably. And you know, there are a number of these that we did, and so I think that's interesting to me because I think that we can still identify, I can still identify talent very well, so we do some of that stuff. And then really the focus is on Ox. So Ox is kind of has his own journey, but so there's a new product, Ox.Fun, and it's got derivatives trading, a CDFI model. So that was released like a month ago, and then we have a rollout product for that. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I think trading, it's fun to like do a product, like a project, and to kind of like put some of the ideas that I wanted to always see projects do. But, you know, no one's really tried using the platform token as the only margin roll currency for now. Like, no one's tried that. I just want to see what happens. So a lot of experiment. I mean, it's kind of a bit of a cult because I think Ox had a bit of its own, you know, it went from 1 cent to 8 cents, back to like half a cent on the prison dump. And then now, like, you know, what's a 2 cent range. So the community is really fun. It's really like, you know, cultish, I guess you could call it. But, you know, there's like 7,000 holders on chain at some point. And, you know, it's, I like the pace of life. It's like, you know, you roll stuff out, you talk about ideas, you just, I think that's the right pace.
So who would you say, it sounds like you've been following lots of people this cycle. Who would you say are the main characters of this cycle? Like, who are the people to follow on Twitter and watch out for and, you know, get a good view from?
I mean, on Solana, obviously Ansem. I think he's definitely the biggest leader there. I think Ethereum stuff, I think smartestmoney.eth, I think, is a really sharp trader. I talked to him a bit. He's really a smart guy. It's funny to see them both feuding because we'll see more and more of these feuds. As people make a ton of money, there's going to be a lot of feuds, ego trips, stuff. For no reason other than that they're just like have a big ego, really. I think, you know, Bitcoin side, like, definitely follow David Bailey. He's only got 20,000 followers, I think, still. But, you know, he, you know, bought shit tons of GBTC at the bottom. He was one of our creditors who was angry at first and then later backed us in Ox and just said, you know, I just double down. Like, and he was also the earliest Western player in Ordinals. Also does the Bitcoin conference. So he's a really interesting guy in the Bitcoin space, I think. But, you know, there's a number of these, like, newer accounts that I think like on the on-chain side, a lot of these, like, you know, names that I'm sure you guys know, like, you know, the friend tech names, like Lollyette, like those kind of guys.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say, right? It's hard to say because as kind of it goes past the native cycle and goes into a normie cycle, the dynamics change a bit as well, for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's some good guys to follow right there. I have a question reverting back to some of the Rec Radio themes we've got going on here. Somebody wants to know, what was the biggest P&L drop you've ever had in a single day, and how did it feel?
I don't think I know exactly how much a single day, but I mean, I'm generally very stoic when it comes to markets. Like, I don't think it's something that... I think stoicism is something that I was just born with. Like, I don't think it's something that you can learn per se. I think some people are more stoic than others just from the way they're brought up as well. Like, I think, you know, for me, my parents actually, when I went into finance, they told me, like, you should be a professor or something. Like, finance, these money games, it's all nonsense. Like, you know, like, and they're like, nothing you do there really means anything. It's all just numbers. So I think, like, for me, I was like, okay, well then I that's the way I always thought about it. So I think it's something where that was both a strength and a weakness. I think it was actually very similar for Doquan actually as well. Just from the, you know, I had some interactions with him, and I think he viewed it very similarly, where it was like just right. So it's like, you know, if you play a video game and your high score goes up or it goes down, it becomes just like a number. So I think that's, in a way, that level of detachment I think is needed to get to very, very high numbers. But at the same time, it's like, it can be, you know, you have to kind of also temper that with like some people around you who are more tied to reality kind of thing. So,
yeah, it's kind of a blessing and a curse. I mean, like, yeah, once you start treating it as numbers on a screen, you know, obviously things can scale and just, you know, become uncapped on your P&L level. You definitely have to do that to level up. But yeah, obviously if you don't take risk parameters, then it can lead to some serious drawdowns just by not really understanding the value of a dollar. I think that I've definitely had those situations myself personally as well, where people are like, you know, they think you're crazy, obviously, for the things you're doing or the swings you're having. But always learning. It sounds like you're always learning too. We had a lot of questions about the prison stint. I guess we just got to dive in there as well. I mean, people want to know, how was that? And like, it wasn't too long. I think, was it 3 months or what was the background about, there on that?
About 2 months. So yeah, it was a 4 month sentence. I served two inside. I did a few more days of house arrest. Yeah. It was honestly not nearly as bad as I thought it would be. I mean, I actually didn't know I was going to go to prison until the day they arrested me in the airport. But in a way, that was good too, because you don't have to like dread going. Like, you just kind of go right in. This is a bit of a shocker. It's almost so shocking that I was just amused, actually. Like, I was just amused by the situation.
Yeah, I can imagine. Just like, fuck.
So it's like, okay, well, that's cool. I didn't expect that. And then, you know, I think after a few more days, you know, I meet my lawyer. He tells me what we're going to do. He's like, okay, that's reasonable. That's fair. And so, like, afterward, I was just like, you know, the first 7 days, they have COVID quarantine. So it's like a little bit, like, you can't go outside at all. So you're just in your cell with three other people. And the cell's not that big. So, you know, he's a bit claustrophobic, a bit, you know, you can't do anything. And they don't have any books at that time either. So the COVID quarantine period is the worst, because you're just like, all you get is your three meals.
A detox.
It's like a full detox. Yeah. And actually, a lot of your cellmates then will be like meth addicts or stuff. So they'll be literally detoxing, because they'll be like sleeping 17 hours a day, like drug, like they just like, you know, and so that's fun. But then once they move you to your like real cell, then it's like, because the real cell is way cleaner and nicer. And then you're just like, wow, I'm in paradise. I'm in heaven, because it's such a contrast. I actually love how they do it, because it like, it prepares you for like really, really bad. I heard they stopped the quarantine now because COVID is not a thing anymore, but the way they do it is actually great. Cause once you get there, now you have books, now you have stuff to do. You know, they have the yard time twice a week. They have the TV time, like almost every day. It's pretty okay. And it's like insanely safe as well. Like, like everyone's friends. It's like the way I describe it is like, you're definitely confined in freedom, but you have a lot of time to think, you have a lot of time to read. And it's like a big daycare, I guess you can call it.
Yeah.
Do you meet anyone there that you're now friends with or you kept in touch with?
Yeah. So I did a podcast on my podcast, Ox Podcast, with one of my soulmates. So we go over that pretty good detail, but like a bunch of people like plan to stay in touch with for a long time. I think it's like, you get, there's people in there for all different reasons. I mean, in Singapore, you have a mix, right? So you got drunk driving guys, you know, you've got like, you know, financial stuff guys. You've also got like, you know, upskirt. They take upskirt photos of girls, and those guys are the, you know, funniest. I mean, it's, you get all different types. And it's like, I think the thing that really struck me is by how like, there are some guys who are like really scared going in, and then after they're in, they're like, oh, you know, it changes them a lot, because most people lose a lot of weight because the food is just so much cleaner than what they eat outside. And so they lose weight, they get fit, they read books. And then there's other guys, you know, like, I think there's a certain type of guy I realize who outside is just so shit for them that inside actually feels better. So they actually just want to stay in. And so that's something that, I mean, I think it's not as bad of a problem in Singapore, but it's really bad in Japan, I've heard, where like elderly people, they'll steal an apple from the store to go to prison, because they want the camaraderie, they want free food, they want free board, they want to not think about anything, right? So I've been thinking about that a lot, just like, you know, how the outside society is in a way so alienating for a lot of people that, you know, like, you would think prison is a punishment, but actually it's like not for them, because it's like, it's a better, it's like they're like back in school or something, or they're back in like a boarding school almost.
Yeah, so technological detox must be wild as well. I mean, like,
yeah, exactly. I love that part. That was honestly the best part, because, you know, during the crypto heyday, right, I'm on my phone all day. You're like Telegram, Twitter, TradingView. You just cycle it nonstop, just super cycling through these apps. And like, you can do this for 14 hours a day, right? Even when eating food, like even when talking to people, I'll just start cycling through everything. And it's just like, it's absolutely insane. Like, I don't think I could have, you know, you wake up in the morning, you check the Bitcoin price, you know, you go to sleep, you check the price. And it's just, I realized when I was inside, like, wait, I haven't had this experience like in like at least 15 years, maybe 20 years. And it was really nice to have, like, I could finally read a book. Like, I realized I haven't actually properly read a book in ages, right? Like, even when you try to read it, you're always like multitasking. So you're not, you start skimming, you start doing stuff. Yeah. So like, I think for, I mean, I understand also I'm talking from a privileged position because I knew there was going to be 2 months and it's like, okay, you know, then you try to make the most of it and get something out of it. But, you know, I think it's a lot harder when people have to do longer sentences and they have to deal with like family implications or like, you know, job implications. But at least for me, like I genuinely felt like, you know, it's something that, you know, you sleep on the floor, it's really nice. Like it's a solid floor. You get that tactile, like, you know, it's hard to describe, but you actually, like, I sleep much better inside than outside. Like after going outside, I sleep maybe 5-6 hours a day, very hard to fall asleep sometimes. And then inside, like, you sleep 8 hours easily. Like, you won't, there's no reason to not sleep, basically. Like, there's nothing in your body that, like, there's no caffeine. Like, there's no, you know, there's literally no reason why you wouldn't sleep, right? Even though, like, you sleep on the floor, you still, you're just going to fall asleep. So it's kind of
interesting. Cool. Yeah, I don't know. My, the comps to a U.S. prison, it sounds like Singapore prison might be a little bit better than things in the major cities around here, though, in the U.S., definitely. I don't know. Or maybe just the depiction is wrong. But
I think I think I saw the thing with SBF and his cellmate that I think Tiffany Fong did an interview and he was saying, you know, there's no gang rapes anymore in prison. That was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like there was a time when Singapore prison was much harder too. Like in the 90s, I heard like, you know, like the poop, you have to like they all poop in the same place, but they don't clean the poop out of your cell. So like you have to wait like 5 days and then they take it out. So it just smells like shit the whole time or like stuff like that. But that's like in the 90s. So I feel like very, you know, we're all very lucky. We live in the golden age, right? Like even the things that are supposed to be hard.
Golden age of prisons.
Golden age of everything, really. Age of everything, really. Like there's like everything today we think is hardship. If you told like your parents' generation, they'd be like, that's not hardship. Like my parents went through cultural revolution in China, which is when you're 18 years old, instead of going to college, you go to like a village for 3 years, right? And so, and you don't, you can't do anything. So that, you know, I think about a lot, like the hardships of our generation. It's like, not, it's not so bad. Right.
Yeah. We had a lot of comments about what you read in prison as well, before we get into closing questions and do these loot box spins. So maybe answer that. And then OSF will ask the closing questions for you.
Sure.
What'd you read in prison? What was the question?
Sure. So I read Game of Thrones series. I read, Dandelion Dynasty series. That's really good. Read a bunch of Jack Reacher books, a bunch of John Grisham books. That's from the
catalog. They got a good selection there.
They got a good selection. You can bring in your own books too. You can bring in your own books too. You can bring in like 3 books per week. So I capped it out. So I had the biggest library by the time I left. And you can basically, like, people keep their own libraries inside. So I had like maybe 12 books, which is like the biggest. And then you can, like, you know, it's, you can then don't donate the books back to the prison, and that forms part of the catalog. So I took in some like weird books. I brought in some weird books too. So it's like non-fiction style stuff about like history and stuff. So there's like some very random books now in the catalog that people want to check out when they're inside again. But
sounds like to me you'd be up for going back to prison on holiday or something for like a detox retreat.
I mean, I still think life is better on the outside, and I think it's still a punitive experience overall. I'm not saying like I would sign myself up to go back. There are people who do that. Well, they'll punch an officer to try to go back in, but that's not me. But I do think that like I'm glad I had the chance to go through it, because I think it changed my perspective a lot. Like I actually outside, I came out and like I almost like knew what I had to say to people, like what things I was supposed to do that I hadn't done properly before. And you have time to reflect and think about stuff like that. So.
Yeah. A proper learning experience for sure. OSF, do you want to ask the closing questions, give out that code, and then we'll do the loot box spins.
Yeah. All right. So last question for you. We asked this to all our guests. What's your best advice on how not to get wrecked? How do you avoid getting wrecked?
Stay humble. Keep part of your portfolio and stuff that can't get wrecked. That's it, really.
Yeah, advice. Don't get ahead of yourself, for sure. Stay disciplined and humble. I think that's always the basis for this question. What is the last code here? And then, Sue, I don't know if you need to leave or what, but we're going to do Rollbit loot box spins. People win NFTs. Somebody won an $80,000 Bored Ape last week. So the guests or the fans, I should say, love this part. Obviously, let's give some shit away. I think there's a shitload of m'ladies in this box as well. So yeah, we're excited to run that. So what's the code?
The second code is m'lady2919. M'lady2919.
Okay. So wait, you OSF, you're doing it from your account today.
I'm gonna do the spins. Yeah, we just need the intent to do the Twitter picker.
Okay, I need to be co-host. So the Twitter wrecked intern, are you there, buddy? We need a Twitter picker, and then I will rejoin as co-host, and then we'll run this shit and give away some stuff.
All right, here we go. Twitter picker is coming out.
So what's your day-to-day like, Sudi? Are you going to be trading today, or are you just chilling? You're just watching the market? What's next today? Well, I guess it's nighttime for you.
Probably going to sleep, yeah.
yeah, exactly. What's tomorrow?
Tomorrow, look at some Ox Fund stuff, watch the markets in general. Same old, really. Do some calls.
Yeah, I guess that's the life now. I mean, I feel like I'm in a similar boat. So do you prefer building over trading? I mean, like the stress level and the life volatility must be a little more comfortable.
I think trying both is, yeah, like I think I'm definitely in the honeymoon period of building. Like I still really enjoy it, even with the hardships of it, for sure.
Okay, we got the people right here. Pina, I already got two of them. Kyle Lewis and Pia, we're paying attention. We got Pina, Pua, P3. I said a lot of shit there, but it's all one person. Can you please request to join on the Twitter Spaces? You have a couple more seconds. Penna? Oh, they're there. Dude, we got 3 for 3. People are fucking...
That's the first time ever.
Yeah, wow. That was fast. People are prepared today. They want this loot box spin. All right, OSF's going to share his screen. First up, we've got Pia. P-I-Y-A. Let's run it.
Can you see my screen? Oh, there we go.
Yeah, can you make it bigger, though, like or something? Like, full screen that for me. Or is it just the way it is?
I think that's just the way
it is. Oh, whatever. You know what? Just run the spin.
All right, here we go. All
right, that's for Pia.
Hello.
All right, good luck.
Let's go.
Let's go, buddy. Looks like you got a sports robot. What is that? Is that any sport, or what is that?
It was a... I didn't miss
all right, well, congrats. You want a robot of some kind. Then we got Kyle Lewis. Kyle Lowles.
All right, good luck.
This is for you, brother. You have one. What is that?
That's an OSF edition. Yeah.
A $6,000 one, though. That's pretty fire.
Congrats. Straight to the floor.
Don't nuke the floor. You're a long-time collector now. Oh, Penna, this is for you.
All right, here we go.
Come on, let's go. In here, maybe a Fidenza. Looks like a robot.
Counter-Strike robot.
After last week, everything feels like a letdown when somebody wins an $80,000 Bored Ape. But either way, the show is great. Thanks for coming on, Sue. I don't know if you want to talk about anything you're doing or promote anything before we roll out. If not, we'll just roll. But yeah, you got the floor.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, it was great chatting. We'll see you in the order books, brother. See you later.
All right. All right. Take care.
Cheers. Bye.